Out of two, I want to see who's the winner here. Who's got the most USB storage out of the conference in terms of swag? I'm sitting at about 60 gig myself. Anyone can beat that? Any takers can beat 60 gig? And the only reason I've done that is because people keep walking up and pressing them into my hand. Like at the MVP breakfast, I got 2 8 gig sticks for doing nothing. So, and then as I was walking past, one of the guys, I dropped the switch off on the way down as a favour. He pressed a 16 gig stick into my hand. So, just pick things up, give them to people, and you get USB sticks. That's it. All right. I also have some more stuff that just got dropped off. I think it's because the last, second last session of the day, you tend to get this stuff. So I've got a whole heap of T-shirts here I'll be giving out. If people ask questions, I'll just chuck your T-shirt. So I don't have a Canon, unfortunately. That'd be a nice way to do it. All right, well, I guess we'll get started. Good still morning, everyone. My name is Mark Rhodes. I'm actually a SharePoint Server MVP, but I've got a very big background in hosted technologies, which has led me to learn a lot about Virtual Machine Manager. So it's actually my third year in a row presenting about Virtual Machine Manager at this TechEd conference. My apologies to the people at the back if you didn't get a USB stick, I'm sorry. Stick your hand up nice and early for a question, I can give you a T-shirt. Okay, before we get started, how many people, can I just see a show of hands, how many people are running or have used VMM 2008 R2? Right, how about VMM 2012? Right, so the rest of you who didn't raise your hand presumably have not got much experience in this, is that correct?
Yep.
Right, and you're probably here to learn a bit about how you can implement it and what benefits you can get out of it. That's what I'd like to pass on to you. Today, in particular, in this session, we're going to focus on application management, in particular, services. So service templates, service instances, and the like. Now, the focus for probably the first half of the session is going to be purely on creating service templates. Okay? And as we go through, I'll explain what they are to you. Okay, so VMM 2008 first introduced the concept of virtual machine templates. These were reliable, repeatable. They were for deployment of virtual machines, just standalone virtual machines. And they're made up of three components. So one or more virtual hard disks, a hardware profile, so how many CPUs you had, how much memory you had, what virtual hard disks were attached, and a guest OS profile. So this was specialization or customization such as an under 10 file. We had a nice GUI to set common properties such as computer name, admin, password, the domain, which user account to join the domain with. And we, as I mentioned, we had the ability to upload a custom under 10.xml file. And that allowed us to do more advanced functions that weren't actually exposed in the GUI. For example, we could have done a GUI run once or something like that. Now, this is good, but it is a little bit limited, I'm afraid, in that we really couldn't do much in-guest customization. And that's really the focus of this session, is getting that in-guest customization going. Okay, so now we're moving on to System Center, Virtual Machine Manager 2012, which addresses three key limitations in particular. And the first limitation is that 2008 R2 templates were only really good for standalone virtual machines. They weren't good for business services or distributed applications. So how often do you deploy just one single server for an application? Doesn't happen too often, does it, right? You're going to be asked for, you know, a web tier and a database tier, or a front end and a back end, or something like that. Or, you know, more commonly even, multiple front ends. Right? So you really need to plan for those. We also have a bigger range of services can be deployed at provisioning time. So a virtual machine without roles is pretty useless. Can anyone think of a virtual machine with no roles installed that can actually do anything? Right, so why not take it out of the actual guest OS and put it into the provisioning time, right? So you can kick off those roles and activations and feature activations when you provision the virtual machine. Virtual machine templates in 2008 were fire and forget, right? So when you deployed an instance from a template, that's when you just deployed, that instance didn't maintain any relationship at all back to the template, which, you know, could cause a bit of problems, right? Like, if you create an instance, you had no idea 6 months later if that instance related back to a specific template. Without a relationship between the instance and the template, there's no way to update that instance or, you know, create a new instance. So this is a feature that's been resolved in 2012. And let's just take an example here, which could be pretty common, right? Let's say you create a template that's got 4 gig of memory and you deploy 10 virtual machines for IIS service, right? It's a month down the track and you discover the application only needs 1.5 gig of memory. So you've got all this memory being used up that you didn't really need, right? Now, what are you going to do? You're going to go and touch 10 machines individually, right, and reduce that amount of memory on each one. Or would it be easier to update the template and then apply that template back to those other 10 machines in one go? It makes more sense to do it in that way, right? And it gives you a bit of governance as well, as if you're going to know exactly what you've changed inside a template, which version of a template you're going to run, and which other instances need to be updated to the newer template. Now, I realise I'm saying these words a lot. It'll make more sense as we go on, I promise you. As I mentioned, you would have to touch all of those 10 machines or devise a script to do it. This is a much easier way of doing it. So as a result of this, there's a new kind of template in Virtual Machine Manager 2012 called a service template. So there are a number of profiles that go with this, and we'll go through these as we go forward. But service templates are used to solve each of those three problems that I mentioned. They allow you to model one or more types of machines you want to deploy. You could deploy to, a three-tier application. So let's say my web tier has X hardware configuration, this particular guest configuration, and these applications and scripts are going to run inside it. And that's right, Virtual Machine Manager 2012 can actually deploy the applications and scripts for you. And we'll say our mid-tier has a different hardware configuration, probably a little bit more CPU and memory intensive, better disks on a different tier, and a slightly different guest customization with no applications at all. And the database tier might be a fully deployed instance of SQL, straight from Virtual Machine Manager with much, much more beefy hardware requirements. Okay, so service templates. Service templates are always the starting point for services, and they are considered the point of truth in VMM. For any services, we require that you actually do have a template first, and these templates specify machine and connectivity requirements. So you can't actually deploy a service without a template. It's just not possible. You can still create a VMM you can still create a virtual machine without a template, but for services, you must have that template first. Deployed services are always going to be linked back to a template, right? You can never delete a template if a service has been provisioned off it, right? This means you've always got something back that you can go and have a look at and see the exact configuration of. So what are service instances? Well, these are a single or groups of machines that work together, including machine definitions as well as applications, and it gives us support for a whole heap of native application types, which I'll go into a bit later. So when you deploy a service instance from a template, VMM will always maintain that relationship back. This is extremely important, and I'll try to show it to you. If we get enough time, we'll do an update. Right, that wasn't included in the original brief, but we'll try to do an update of a template. Now, the only way to make an update to a template, too, is to actually copy it. Right, we can't modify a running template because we've got instances that still depend on it. So we have to make a copy, and then we apply that copy back to service instances, and they'll be upgraded. In this session, we're not going to talk about lifecycle or updating, but as I said, I might try to do something at the end. We're going to focus on what the components of a service template are and how do we go about updating them. So we'll probably hopefully spend about half the session in a demo system going through this. Sorry, I thought someone was asking a question there for a second. Service templates. So has anyone had experience using virtual machine templates inside VMM 2008? Anyone? A couple of people? Right, well, it's going to be a little easier for you people because these are the building blocks of a service template, right? You can take your virtual machine templates and drag and drop them straight into a service template, and bang, you've got a service template. That's how easy it is. The in-guest config and specialization from VMM 2012 is only applicable to services. So even if you've got a virtual machine template and you've gone through and customized and said, look, I want to add the IIS role in, or I want to add .NET 3.5.1 features in, that's not actually going to work if you deployed just a VM template. But if you took that template, put it inside a service template, everything would magically come to life and it would just work. if you actually do try to deploy that VM template with those customizations in there, you will get an error saying these items are going to be skipped. And it will tell you you only get the benefits from deploying if you deploy out to a service template. That said, VM templates are a really fantastic building block because with the editor, the service template editor that's come in VMM 2012, it's a drag and drop interface. So I can see off to one side all of my service templates, and all I have to do is click, drag, drop, and I'm done. It really is that easy. And all we have to do then is click deploy, and it'll work. So as you'll see, we're going to start with a standard VM template that folks can use as a simple building block for service templates, and you'll see just how easy it is to drag and drop them in. Okay, in terms of in-guest configuration via services in VMM 2012, VMM can do a number of things. So the first thing, we can configure Windows roles and services, and two, VMM has first-class support for service and application package types, which I'll go into. So what are first-class applications? Can I put applications in my template? I'll explain first-class support in a moment, but application types are really Microsoft Web Deploy for IIS-based applications, Server App V, which I'm hopeful. Has everyone heard of Server App V? Yeah, a few people, great. And SQL data tier applications. So Server App V is very similar to Client App V, so it's a similar technology, a derivative of the Client App V technology geared towards server workloads and server subsystems, and it ships as part of VMM 2012. SQL data tier applications are simply something called DACPACs. Have we got any people familiar with DBAs in the room? Yeah, you familiar with DACPACs? Yeah, it's a nice, easy way to take the model and schema of a database and export it out. It doesn't actually include any of the information, but it does give you a good schema of the database. And VMM has the ability to install DACPACs into SQL servers that are either virtual, physical, managed by VMM, or not even managed by VMM, and we'll go through that. Okay, so what are first-class application types? These are objects we can put into our VMM library and actually understand and refresh the metadata around them. So the first one is a web deploy package. This is effectively taking an entire IIS application, the sites, the content, and wrapping it up in a single file, and that's called a web deploy. It has the concept of a parameters file, so this is considered its metadata, right? And you can specify what particular items are configurable inside that metadata. For instance, if we're talking about a web application, very commonly a web application will have what behind it? A database tier, right? What's it going to need to connect back to a database tier? Anyone? Yeah, connection string. Who said that? Have a t-shirt. 2XL? So we can actually say So VMM can actually read in those parameters from the metadata and allow us to configure them. So if an end user comes and deploys a service instance from a service template, we can actually say, hey, let's go and deploy an entire blog engine, the front end and the back end, and we can specify this connection string at the deployment time. The end user can do that with no interaction from us. Us being the IT administrator or the person setting up VMM. The same thing is true for Server App V. So in Server App V, instead of parameters, we've got a construct called deployment config, which are all the properties that were captured about an application when it was actually sequenced. These are refreshed in from metadata again, and VMM will allow us to modify them, set different values, or get end user values at deployment time. Now, if we want to, we can actually set default values in the service template. So we click deploy, it'll just do everything with no user interaction whatsoever, but we can allow the end user to override those parameters. And lastly, we have DACPACs, which, as I said, are the model and schema of your database. They don't contain any information at all, right? But what they do contain are just the model and schema. If you want to get any tables or data in, you need to do that with a SQL script, which, again, VMM can inject. So a fairly common question is, that's great, I use some web deploy, or I'm looking at Server App V, but I still use MSIs. Do people still use MSIs to do their deployments internally? Yeah, quite a few nods. Well, you might also have custom setup exes or custom scripts that you've written to go ahead and deploy applications for you. What can you do? Well, what we can do is we can inject into the guest at the operating time something called generic command execution. So this allows us to inject anything at either provisioning time or even at an update further down the line, a payload, which is just a directory full of files. We can execute one or more arbitrary scripts, and we can control the order these scripts run in and the kickoff, the parameters to kick these scripts off. If you had an MSI, you could put it in the folder in the VMM library. We could also put it in a CMD file that might be, say, msiexec-q-l and the name of the MSI, so it does a quiet installation of it. and it'll inject the payload into the VMs, into your guest, and execute that script, which gives us really, really detailed control over exactly how the script gets executed. So we've got good terms of security. We can say exactly which user we want this to run as. We can say, if this is successful, run a reboot. If it's not successful, throw an error. We could say, if we get standard in or standard out or standard error, we can take that and do an action or feed it back to the user. And I'll try to go through those in the demonstration. So what versions of these packages are supported? Because there's multiple versions out there. So in VMM 2012 RTM, which is what everyone should have access to right now, we've got support for WebDeploy 2.0, SQL DACPAX 1.1, and ServerApp v RTM, which is actually part of VMM RTM. Thought I heard R2. So in the upcoming Service Pack 1, and just so everyone knows, has everyone heard that the Service Pack 1 beta has actually dropped while TechEd was running? Yep. So if you want to go and get this, it's in a public beta now. You can go grab it and give this a try, and it should work. So we've got support for DACPAX v3, WebDeploy v3, and ServerApp vsp1, which again is part of VMM sp1. So why would you actually use services as opposed to just go and setting these up yourself? For one, we've got management of multi-tier applications. So we can manage distributed applications, distributed meaning multi-machine applications, as a single unit, right? So inside the VMM console, your entire application just comes up as one unit. We can start them as a unit, we can deploy them as a unit, we can stop them as a unit, we can save state or delete them all as a unit. And we don't need to have to remember which VMs actually contribute to a specific application. Does anyone have that problem where you go and deploy an application 6 months down the track, you've got no idea which VMs are involved anymore? It's a very tidy way to get around that problem is to have it all wrapped up inside the services tab of the VMM console. Two, we can scale out on demand. What we can actually do here is we can mark a specific tier of servers or server inside the service template as scale out, and we can say how many we want it to scale out to. So let's say that we've got a web application with a back end and a front end. We anticipate that load might increase, so we've put a load balancer, which you can do inside the service template, and we've set the web tier so that if need be, we can scale out. Now, to be very clear about this, VMM won't scale out automatically, right, on load, but if you hook into Orchestrator or SCOM, you can actually kick off something to scale out automatically. So if you hit a certain load threshold, you could add another web front end automatically. If it goes away, you can scale it back. And finally, we can compose and manage images. This is probably the most important functionality. For a t-shirt, let's see, how many sysprepped images do people maintain?
One.
Sorry?
One.
One?
One for desktop, one for server.
Does anyone have more than that? So just the two? Does anyone maintain multiple images, like let's say an IIS server or a database server? Yep.
About 8 or 9.
That's pretty common. Yep. Anyone else beat that? No, 8 or 9. It's about right usually. What size?
XL.
I think that's all they make at TechEd. This again. I'm not saying anything. This is an Excel, it's a bit of a squeeze. Okay, so when the VMM team actually went out and spoke to customers, they found that lots of customers maintain lots and lots of different sysprepped images. I'm guilty of it myself, and I'm using this technology. I've got an image for an IIS server, a SharePoint server, I've got an image for developers to use with Visual Studio installed on it. I've got an image with SQL sysprepped into it. Talking to customers, we had BizTalk servers, file servers, the list goes on and on and on. There are an awful lot of images to maintain, and how much time, let's talk to the gentleman with 9 images, how much time would you spend maintaining your images, do you reckon? Lots?
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah. You might get some updates you have to deploy or change the packages behind it, all that kind of stuff. It can be fairly substantial, right? So if you've got an image that defines a standard, say, IIS server, and it's been sysprepped, and you have to make a change to that image, you've got to rehydrate it, make the changes, sysprep it again, uploaded into a library or something like that. So if you think about what we're doing here with service templates, it's very possible you can only have the one template, the one sysprept image. Right, that's what this is going towards. So we have, say, a single base 2008 R2 image or a 2012 image. If you're running SP1, you've got support for 2012 images. And we've got no roles or features configured on that, no custom configuration, no applications, and we define all of our customizations inside the service template. So rather than go ahead and make those changes to guest ourselves and maintain huge image libraries, we can get VMM to do that for us. And what's better, it'll keep track of those changes for us, right, and allow end users to specify those changes. The other benefit is that, you know, maintaining a big library of images, and I know server storage is cheap, but it does use up a bit of server storage, right? Well, for anyone who's used 2008 R2, all of this information exists in VMM's metadata in the database, right? And it's very, very, very lightweight. It's just XML, right? So it's going to take up a lot less disk space than your sysprep images are going to take up. They're easier to modify than, you know, the process of rehydrating and storing and sysprepping. Oh, and for people who are concerned about this too, there used to be a problem in 2008 R2 and 2012 RTM in that you couldn't import or export templates, right? Which, if you lost your database, it could cause problems. The functionality is there now, so you can, you know, grab a template and export the whole thing. It makes it really easy to, you know, track and maintain. You can dump into file systems on a regular basis, so you've got backups if you need to roll back to those. Okay. Creating a service template. So we're always going to start by creating a service template because you can't deploy a service without that service template from which you're going to deploy. It's always going to be the starting point. So a new design has been introduced in VMM 2012, which allows easy modeling of the services and allows you to save those service templates. And what you're going to do when you're creating a service template is to define the machines and tiers of machines as well as their connectivity. So, you know, connectivity to logical networks, connectivity to load balancers. And if you think about the design time aspect of a service at the time you're actually constructing the service or authoring it, you don't really have information like which exact hosts are the instances going to end up being deployed onto, right? And hopefully being, you know, a private cloud or something like that you're deploying to, you don't really care where they're going to. So we can model having a load balancer in the system. We don't really care which load balancer this goes behind. And VMM is intelligent enough to use some of the load balancers out there, like Big IPs or the Citrix one, which I can't remember the name of. Netscaler, thank you. Or just NLB. And what happens is the VMM intelligent placement algorithm, which is a, you know, when you click deploy, it goes through and works out the best hosts to deploy to. That's going to figure out where it's going to go to, whether that be a host group or a private cloud. It's just going to check, do you have access to all the resources we need to perform that deployment? If it doesn't, we're going to get a nice sensible error message, even if we're an end user, saying this is the reason you could not deploy. An example of that might be our service template requires high availability, but we don't have any highly available clusters, right? Our end user is going to get an error message saying, you know, you specified the VMs in this tier need to be highly available, but there is no cluster in this cloud. Okay, in VMM 2012, we had support for a number of artifacts that could be dropped into the VMM library, and that would refresh in. Examples of this might be VHD files, unattend files, PowerShell scripts, and so forth. VMM 2012 support has been introduced for a whole new number of artifacts that you can deploy in, so the web deploy packages, server app V packages, and we also introduced was the custom resource. So if you've got a folder inside your VMM library with .cr on the end, it's going to treat that as a custom resource. And VMM 2012 includes some custom resources by default. Has anyone actually seen those, you know, and wondered what they are? So, you know, you click deploy, you go through and provision VMM and you're looking in your library and you see like sav-deploy, right, .cr, right, that's server app V. It's one of the ones that's included out of the box. So is web deploy. So server app V and web deploy are ready to go out of the box. And it makes it really, really easy to deploy, you know, web deploy out to a server or server app V out to a server. So generic command execution will execute custom scripts within the service instances. We can specify the runner's account, what happens, so do we want the script to restart the server, what error logging or logging do we want to do, And we can script which parameters leverage configurable service settings. That's a fancy way of saying we can pretty much configure all of the settings that go into the deployment. By using custom resources and dropping into the VMM library, you can take advantage of the custom execution, and it'll allow you to execute custom scripts and deliver arbitrary payloads inside of a VM. Okay, so in 2010 RTM, when you execute a script to VMM, the script really is a black box, right? It's kicking off a script. It really doesn't know what the script's actually doing, right? So whatever reason, if the script fails at deployment time or servicing time, you will always have the option to restart the VMM job or to continue the deployment, but VMM will never actually rerun that script, right? It's just going to skip over it because we don't know what the script's doing. The assumption is made that something's failed and it's unsafe to re-execute it. In Service Pack 1, we've got the ability to add scripts and mark them as idempotent, which means if a script should fail and VMM job fails because of the script, we can say, let's restart, but we'll re-execute that script, right? So you know it's safe to re-execute it if something goes wrong. Okay, and there are multiple entry points for generic command execution. So we're not just limited to one script, and VMM will give us the ability to execute these scripts both pre and post installation of any application and pre and post all applications that are being installed. Right, we can also provide additional points when you're updating services to add custom scripts. So let's say that you've got a few service templates out there and you decide you want to add one particular feature, right, to every single one of those, right, and then update it. When you apply that feature, you also need a custom script to be run. You can say, after I've added this feature, let's say .NET 3.5.1, I want you to go and run this particular command file or this custom resource. And we can say, we could, if we wanted to, say, do it beforehand, so we could go and download the files from a file server instead of, you know, going out to Windows Update and getting it from there, right? Is everyone aware that in SQL 2008, two sysprep functions were introduced? No? Nobody knew that? Yeah, a few people did. It's actually really, really handy. So what you can do is you can take SQL 2008, R2, go to the advanced, you know, features, and you can install a sysprepped image of the server, SQL server, on there. So what you can do is it's a two-part, right? You do a sysprep, and then you do a complete later. So you sysprep with SQL, then you sysprep, you know, using Windows sysprep, take that thing and do whatever you do to deploy it, doesn't matter. But when you finish customizing the guest OS, right, you can then come along and customize SQL, right, using an attend file, or VMM can actually do this for you, right, which is really cool, right? It's a very, very easy way to deploy SQL servers. And for those of you going, yeah, that sounds great, but what about best practices and the like? Well, the unattend files we can actually inject into that system allow us to really control best practices. So VMM is smart enough for us to go, I want to deploy out a SQL server. I want to put, you know, three different kinds of VHDs in different storage tiers. And with my SQL completion script, I'm going to run that. It's going to go and provision out. So, you know, let's say my data goes onto a RAID 5 array. My log files go onto a RAID 10 array. All of that stuff can all be done within VMM, which keeps the DBAs kind of happy. Something important to add is that SQL Server 2008 R2 is supported with RTM. SQL Server 2012 is supported with Service Pack 1. Okay, so to take advantage of that functionality, you really need to create a new kind of profile called a SQL profile. So if you've created a VHD that has a prepared instance of SQL ready to go, you can use the SQL profile inside VMM to complete the installation of SQL at the VM provisioning time. So essentially what's happening is machine is provisioned and you get a fully functioning instance of SQL ready to go, no manual intervention ready, and it's going to be much, much quicker than it would be if you went and installed SQL yourself on the guest or even had an end user do it. And what this gives us is a fully configurable SQL service with really just a click. So VMM allows us to configure what the instance name is. We can have support for multiple instances if we want to. It lets us set the authentication mode, whether we want to use Windows or, you know, mixed mode. Do we want to use TCP, IP, or named pipes? Much like the guest OS profile with an unattend file, so if VMM doesn't have all the options inside the GUI, you can attach an unattend XML file, and it will run off that as well. And what it actually does there is if you go and populate all the settings in the GUI, right? And there's settings in the other 10 file. It'll do a diff between the two and merge them. So anything that you've done in the GUI will override the other 10 file. So you end up being, you know, able to still customize and still use another 10 file without any problems. Okay, so when the VMM team heard from customers that they talked about SQL database, they said, well, it's great the VMM can provision SQL servers, it's great that we can deploy databases, but usually when I deploy applications into my environment, I don't give each application its own SQL server. Does anyone know what I'm talking about there? Right, you don't, you know, give every single application its own SQL server. You've probably got some big monster SQL server that you'll just, you know, use a small portion of for your application. So in VMM 2012 RTM, we have something called an application host. And what that is it's a SQL Server application host, which allows us to create a profile that consists only of SQL data tier applications, so DAC packs. And optionally, you can also put some SQL scripts in to inject data or customizations. And you can use that profile in the context of a service template, which means to deploy, we can go and deploy databases and customize information for a web application when we're deploying the actual web tier, and still do it on a big mammoth SQL server that's already being managed by a DBA team somewhere. In Service Pack 1, a new type of application host has actually been delivered called a web application host, and that allows us to deploy, much like the SQL DAC packs, to an existing SQL server. We can now deploy out web deploy packages to existing IIS servers in case we've got like a big IIS farm, you know, that we want to leverage. And this really doesn't matter whether it's standalone, farm-based, physical, virtual. It doesn't even have to be managed by VMM. We just need the credentials stored in the VMM library. So what use is a template if you can't customize it? Well, a service template can be thought of like a recipe for delivering a workload or for a particular kind of infrastructure. So a service template for an IIS server or a service template for a DHCP server and so forth. And what happens for distributed applications is that the service application might require multiple instances deployed of the same service to multiple environments. For example, dev, test, and prod, right? It's a fairly common situation that your developers are going to serve a server farm to develop on. They're also going to want a farm to test on for end users, and you're going to want the production farm. And if you think about an application, say a simple just two-tier application with an IIS server and IIS site and a SQL database, there must be a connection string to control and connect between these two, right? So we want to be able to configure that at deployment time, because we want to use that single template to deploy out multiple instances. What we really need to do there is control our connection string. And when I'm doing this now, I can say the one template is being used to deploy multiple instances so that I know all of the machines in those instances are created from exactly the same way, from the same recipe. And this kind of prevents a big problem, which I talked about yesterday in my dev versus IT pro session, which is this works on my laptop, but it doesn't work on production. Or this works in dev, it works in test, but it doesn't work on prod. Has anyone come across those kind of situations? Hopefully, by using this... Sorry, what was that? By using this kind of methodology, we can avoid that because our dev, test, and prod are going to be identical. Right? The only thing that's going to change between them is the connection string. Users can specify configurable service settings. So this is just so amazingly powerful. Let's say, how many people have multiple domains? Yeah, quite a few people. Right, is there a good chance that you're, let's say you had an end user, you've made them a self-service user inside VMM, and they're going to want to go out and join their virtual machine that they're just creating to a domain, and you've got multiple domains. Right, what are you going to do? You have multiple service templates just so that they can join to, say, Contoso domain, or one for Alpine Ski Lodge or something like that. Sorry, that's a really old one. Yeah, Litware, there we go, that's a better one. Are you going to, you know, create multiple service templates? I don't think so. It doesn't make much sense, right? So what you can actually do is say at domain at as a configurable service setting, and when a user goes and deploys this service, it's going to ask them, which domain do you want to join? And you know, what are you going to need to join a domain? You're going to need an account to join it. So we give them the option too of, you know, which domain join account do you want to use? Right, and we can go through this whole thing and specify these configurable service settings all the way through. And that doesn't stop at those settings that we just talked about then. We can do it for the connection string. Right, we can do it so that we go and when we're provisioning with SQL DAC packs, we're doing it, we've, you know, provisioned our model and schema out to our database. We've created a database, no tables in it. Then we run a SQL script to populate tables and populate data. We can also at the same time create customizable DB users in there, right? So customizable SQL logins just for your web application. So suddenly this becomes really powerful, doesn't it? Right? You've got a lot of flexibility in the whole platform. Okay. What's interesting too is that because we're maintaining a relationship between service instances and service templates, right, it means that we're going to be saving all of the configurable data in the VMM library and the VMM metadata. Right. What I mean there is, let's say you have an end user who goes out and deploys a web farm, right? 3 weeks down the track, they discover something's wrong, or you've discovered something's wrong with the template, and they have to update it. VMM's actually stored all of those configurable service settings, like your domain join account, your DB user. That's all stored in the database there, so that if you needed to do an update, they don't have to go back and enter that data again. They can just click update, and everything will magically happen. Okay, service settings properties. So as service settings have properties, once you define these service settings throughout your model, you can mark them as mandatory or optional, right? You can even say, I want to put in a default value. So as an example, you have a web application that has a timeout setting. In the test environment, you might set that timeout to 360 because you're running on slightly slower hardware. However, in prod, you're going to set it to 120 because you want a realistic timeout figure. So what you might do is set a default timeout value on your service of 240 seconds, right? And then you can say, I'll allow my end user to override that at deployment time so that they know what the timeout is. If they want to change it to 10 seconds, they can change it to 10 seconds. VMM also provides some predefined service settings, such as at computer name at or at VMID at. Right? So if you're executing a custom script inside of a machine and you needed to know the machine name as a parameter, you could actually pass in at computer name at, and it would provide that value straight into the script, and I'll try to demonstrate that. All right, we're getting closer to the demonstration now. This is probably the most complicated slide I've got. So first off, what you're seeing here in the center in green is where VMM was in 2008 R2. So we had a VM template that consisted of VHDs, hardware profiles, and guest OS profiles. In 2012, we added to that a computer tier that is housed inside a new kind of template called a service template. We also have an application profile which allows us to define applications that we want deployed inside our guest. And an application profile itself can have one or more application deployments. So you could have, say, a single app profile. It has 3 web deploy packages, 2 server IP packages, 6 data tier applications, and 4 scripts that are being executed. There is also an optional extension point. Sorry, my mouse has just died. There's also optional extension points where scripts can be executed pre and post any of the applications being installed. We also have roles and features that have been added to our guest OS profile. A SQL profile was added for completing the sysprepped instances of SQL I mentioned earlier. And that SQL profile has one or more SQL deployments, so think of that as a SQL instance. We also have integration with load balancers, so as I said, NLB. We've also got downloadable providers so the VMM framework for load balance is very, very extensible, meaning if a provider wants to and they've got, let's say, a load balancer, they can write a framework for this to use. Existing ones, Citrix NextScaler, F5, BigIP. We can specify a VIP load balancing method, any other particulars we want to, and it allows us to do updates to service instances without any downtime, right? It's smart enough to know it's being load balanced. Update one before you update the other if you've got multiple servers in a tier. We also have the application host profile, which allows us to deploy and execute SQL applications and T-SQL scripts against arbitrary servers. And in 2012 SP1, there's been added support for web deploy and SQL DAC packages. And we also have settings. Okay, I think we can get into a demo now. All right, here we are inside VMM. So the first thing you can see is I'm on the services pane, right? And you can see I've got 3 services already deployed. So I've got demo web application staging, demo web application production, and incentive web farm. And if I drill out here, you actually see I've got a web tier and a database tier. They're both running. We can see, let me just page it over, we can see the template name and we can see the version of the template I'm using. Right, so straight away we've got a very, very good idea of exactly what I've deployed here, right? Because I'm going to know exactly what's contained in that template. And remember, that template, no matter what, can't be deleted or modified. Right, so that is set in stone, exactly the deployment that's happened here. Okay, we're now going to go over to the library. And the first thing I want to do is I want to create some VM templates, because these are going to be the building blocks I'm going to build off. So we're going to create an IIS server first. So I'll go up to Create VM Template. And I'm going to do it from an existing virtual hard disk I prepared earlier. So just so you know, this virtual hard disk, it's sysprep. It's got no roles or features installed. It does have SQL sysprepped and ready to go on it. Now, SQL doesn't have a big footprint, right? It's got maybe a gig of disk footprint. So I actually sysprep SQL into all my images. It just makes sense for me. So if I want to later on, I can just deploy it very easily. If you wanted to, you could maintain a non-sysprepped version, you know, one with, say, Windows and the other one with SQL and Windows. So we'll click Browse. And you'll note that I'm going to pick this one here, and you can see it's a VHDX file. Right, and this support for VHDX only came in SP1. Okay, and I'll click Next. And we're going to call this Standard 2008 R2 IS, which should be enough for us to go on. We'll click Next. And we're going to configure a very basic hardware profile for an IIS server. So what do you reckon? Maybe two virtual CPUs? Is about a gig of RAM enough for an IIS server? Anyone think more or less? No? Less? Okay. We'll go for 1 gig of RAM. We're also going to go down and we're going to remove the legacy network adapter, which is the default. Right? And we're going to change that to just a normal network adapter. And we're going to make sure that's connected to a logical network I've got predefined, so demo network, and assign a static IP because I've already created a static IP pool inside that demo network. Okay, now we get to the kind of interesting stuff. What we can do here is we can start using some of the features of VMM to manage our guest operating system for us. So rather than, you know, put a predefined name in or allow my end user to define the IIS server name, which they can still do if I want them to, I'm going to let VMM control that for me. And I'm going to call this Windows IIS just three hashes, which means it'll start with 001 and it'll increment that and manage it for me. So if I go on and I deployed a server, or say 10 servers, and I, you know, removed a few of them, it will actually remove those from the database and pick up from where it left off. So it'll reclaim those names for you. You do have to be kind of careful though, because when VMM, if you deployed a service instance, deleted it, and it was joined to a domain, you're going to have that computer name still in Active Directory. Just have to be aware of that. You could, in theory, if you're clever about it, actually write a script that goes into Active Directory, you know, at pre-deployment time, checks for the computer name. If it exists, then stop the deployment. Otherwise, it's going to fail when it gets to the domain join stage of the preparation. Okay, we're going to go down to admin password. Now, rather than specify a password or select a run as account, we're going to go to browse. And you can see up the top here, we've got the ability to use a configurable service setting. So we'll call this at local admin account at. And what that is doing is specifying a variable we can then use throughout the service template. The end user will only have to ever specify it once, but it'll allow them effectively to pick a existing run as account and use that, right, to be their local admin account. Okay. We're also going to add some roles in. So we'll go down to roles, and you can see you can pick out the roles and features that you need. So we'll go through. As this is an IIS server, it makes sense to add in the IIS server role. We also want the IIS management console. And we want ASP.NET. We'll also go to features, and we'll add in .NET Framework 3.5.1 features and .NET Framework 3.5.1. And we'll also go down to domain, And again, we can start using some of those service settings to specify the domain. Rather than saying join it to contoso.local or something like that, we can say at domain at, and we can say select the run as account that we want to use for joining that domain. We could use a pre-existing domain join account, but it makes more sense if we have multiple domains to allow the user to specify that for themselves. So let's say we had a run as account for Contoso to join the domain and a run as account for Litware. If you wanted them to join the Contoso domain, obviously they need to pick the Contoso run as account. If you want them to join Litware, the same thing. So for this one, we'll call it at domain join account at. And just exploring these features a little bit, you can see down the bottom here, we've got some features we can explore. So an answer file. If we want to, we could append an unattend.xml answer file to this. And when we did the deployment, it would go through and it would do a merge. So any features that haven't been overwritten by the end user would be populated by the answer account. We also have a legacy item here, which is GUI run once, right? So this could be run at first deployment. We really don't need this anymore. It's very irrelevant in terms of service templates. It's only really relevant for VM templates, right? And one thing I'll stress again is that roles and features will only be deployed if this is a service template, right? If we try to create a VM template with these roles and features enabled and we went and deployed this just as a VM template, it's going to tell us these features are only available as a service template. So you're going to have to deploy it as that. Okay. We'll click Next. We're not going to deploy any applications as this is an IIS server, and we're obviously not going to add any SQL information there. Okay, so that's our first template created. Now, to make a multi-tier application, we really need another template, so we're going to go through that again quickly. And I'll just whiz through this one. We'll pick the same disk. We'll call this one standard 2008 R2 SQL. Now, as this is, you know, the back end, it's going to probably require more resources, so we'll bump that up to 2048 meg of RAM. We will go down again and remove the legacy network adapter and add in normal network adapter, connected to the same demo network, same static IP pool. And we'll configure the operating system quickly. So this time we'll call it Windows SQL ... And what we can do here, this is where, again, it gets really interesting, is we can put in that same local admin account so that the two, as these are likely going to be part of the same service template, we only have to specify that local administrator account once and it will populate into both virtual machines. So at local admin account at. We have to be careful because it has to match it exactly or it won't work, obviously. For this one, we don't need any roles or features. We do need to join to the domain. So we'll put in at domain again. And again, because of the way we're doing this, we can use the same domain join account. Okay, click Next. We don't want any applications, but we do want to configure SQL Server. So we're going to add a SQL Server deployment now. Okay, and we will give this a nice friendly name of just SQL deployment. Now the instance name, which you have to actually know your instance name and your instance ID from when you sysprep the actual image, right? So take care to note those down when you go through and sysprep SQL that you've recorded that information. I recorded it and it was MS SQL Server, which is the default. I'm going to let the installation run as the system account. And now I'm going to go down to configuration. And you can see it's asking me for a media source. So this is kind of tricky, right? Your media source has to be either included into the image, right, or on a file share and accessible to the machine. Now, if it's on a file share and accessible to the machine, you need to make sure that your security account here, your runner's account, has access to that file share. It's not going to work. So in which case, if I was going to load it off a file share, I'd make sure that I had an account there which has permission to it and I'd have it as a runners account ready to go, so it'd be a domain account. In my case, because I've included on the image, I go to /SQL, and I'm going to add a SQL Server administrator. I'm running SP1 CDP2, so it's a slightly more buggy version. Let me just close the console and redo it. It happens from time to time, I'm afraid. It is beta software. Of course, the full SP1 release, which is somewhere down the track, won't have any of those problems. I don't work for Microsoft. I can make any promise you like. We'll just go back and we'll quickly do that again. Okay, so please bear with me. Yes, it does, as far as I'm aware. Actually, you know what? I take that back, because technically this is all just PowerShell, right, with a GUI in front of it, right? And PowerShell is not especially case-sensitive, so which means it probably doesn't have to be case-sensitive. Okay, sorry, we've almost caught back up. Okay, we're back to the SQL side of things, so hopefully this will work this time. Okay. Set the run as account as system, go over to configuration and put in C software SQL, and we'll click add here. That's a bit better. I'm going to add my own administrator account in. What that'll do is now, just so you know, and this is a gotcha that happens to a lot of IT pros, when you're deploying SQL, it doesn't actually add the local administrator group in the sysadmin's role inside SQL. Right? It catches people out quite frequently. What this is doing here is it's adding that user into that role, which is really, really handy. It's a great way to get around a problem. We can also go down here, and you can see we've got security mode. We can go to Windows or SQL authentication. I'm going to choose SQL authentication, so mixed mode. And I'm going to say for this one, oh yes, we're just going to set a password here. So I can actually put in @SA password and it will prompt the end user for that if I want them to. Or what I can do is I can say, well, you know, I've got an SA account I want to use for everything. Let's use that instead. That makes more sense to me. We can also say, do I want to use TCP/IP for remote connections or do I want to use NAT pipes or both? I'll just go for TCP/IP. If we wanted to, we can actually upload to the unattend SQL answer file there. So I can click browse if it's inside the library. And lastly, we can actually specify the runners accounts that we want to use for SQL to run as once it's finished doing its sysprep. In this case, I'm just going to go for system. And we click next. And we click create. So right there, we've made the building blocks of a service template. It's pretty easy to do these kind of steps, right? And to make this into a service template is even easier. If I just go to service templates, and we will create a new service template. I'll give it a name. we will call it TechEd Demo Release 1.0. And I'll just choose blank. Now, this editor is still a little bit iffy. Like, it's not fantastic. But what I'll do is I've got these two templates over here you can see on the left-hand side. So all I have to do is drag them in. And just like that, I've essentially created a service template, right? All I have to do is pick Save and Validate, and I could click Configure Deploy. We'll call it Tulip Decker Demo System. We're not actually going to do a deployment yet, but you can see the Intelligent Placement service has gone through and it's found a host. Right, in this case, VM host 2 for both of these. And you can see over the bottom left-hand side here that it's actually asking me for some settings. So the domain join account, and the local admin account. Okay, so I could put in, let's say, demo.local, and I can go through and pick, say, my domain join account, which is pre-existing, and a local administrator account. And all I would have to do is click Deploy Service, and that will go off and do that for me. I'm going to cancel out of that. Now, I'll just do this quickly. I'll show you. If we go to Save, we can actually go back. Let's say I'm not sure if I want to deploy this yet. Maybe I want to go and create. I've created a deployment, but I don't have enough space or something like that, right? So I'm going to go and free up some space. I've saved the deployment, so if I want to redeploy it, you can see it's been saved inside service deployment configuration. So all I have to do is right-click Configure Deployment, and we're back where we started with the settings saved. Okay. Now, we can do some kind of funky stuff here. So what I'm going to do, we'll go to Service Templates, and we're going to take TechEd Demo. We're going to copy it because I don't want to change that just in case. So the first thing we're going to do is open that up and change that to 2.0. And we'll call it TechEd Demo-Applications. All right. Oh, sorry, that's not what I wanted to do. I want to open the designer up. And this is where we're going to go into those VM templates, right, and really use the functionality that a service template enables us to use. Okay, so what I can do, if I go over to our SQL, not go to the IS server first. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go in to applications, and we're going to add in an application, right? So the first thing we need to do is we need to set the compatibility range, which means that the only thing this service template will deploy to, right, are if the guest operating system matches these levels. So in this case, I'll pick R2 Data Center, R2 Enterprise, and R2 Standard. I'll click Add, and we're going to add a web application first. Now, if I click Browse, you can actually see I've got a web application in there. Now, that's incentive-webdeploy.zip, which is a web deploy package. So we'll go have a quick look at that. And you can see that is just a package with ignore all of this because this is a very specialized one, but if we go in here, that's what a web deploy package looks like, right? Web.config files and all of the manifests you need to go and deploy an entire web application, including all of the files and content. So all of the IIS settings, everything you need to go and deploy a full web application out of IIS. So we'll add that in. Now, you can see straight away, as I said, that VMM is aware of the metadata surrounding this, right? When you drop a web deploy into the library, it can go in and refresh all that metadata. So straight away, you can see we're able to populate things like app data location, application path, connection string, DB password, DB username, all the really important stuff you need to go and deploy a web application or what the incentive web app thinks are all its parameters, effectively. So we'll give this a better name. We'll call it Incentive Web Application. Okay, now there's one other thing we need to do. Web deploy is not standard out of the box, right, on any service. So what we need to do is we need to add web deploy in, and we can make VMM do that for us by going down to scripts. So I'll go add script. And obviously, we're going to want a pre-install script if we want this to work. So we've got cmd.exe dash parameters deploy install webdeploy.cmd. I'll pick the script resource package, which is pretty obvious here. It'll be webdeploy x64. And I can even pick the run as account. So we'll do that as local service. Okay, now if I actually go and have a look at this web deployed package very quickly. Sorry, it's not a web deployed package, it is in here. If we go and have a look in web deploy x64 folder, this is all it is. It's an MSI file and a CMD file, right? And that CMD file is very, very simple. It's just saying install that MSI, basically. Does that all make sense? Yep, great. So we'll make sure that's there, that's there. We can even go to advanced settings. This is where things get kind of cool, right? We can say if the standard output, we want to capture that, we can write it to a file onto the guest operating system. Same with standard error. So we can get information about what's actually happening when these execute. So we'll say, and we'll write standard error to text. So we'll write to cstdout.txt and cstderr.txt. And we can even say, in the event of a failure, we'll try to match standard output or standard error or an exit code. And we can even give it an action. So we can warn and continue, or we can fail the task. We can also say there's a restart policy here, so we can say always restart once the script is finished running if we want to reboot that server prior to completing. And what will happen then is it'll kick off the reboot, and then immediately once that's come back up, move on to the next step. And we can say if a certain code is returned, let's do a restart. We don't really need any of that, so we'll just leave that one default. And just like that, we've got enough information there to click OK. All right, so now you can see that the incentive web application is actually showing up in there now. Obviously, before that really gets anywhere, we're going to need a back end. So we'll have a look at the SQL Server quickly. Obviously, we'll go down to SQL Server configuration. we'll go to application configuration, because we've already prepared the SQL Server, right? It's actually going to go through and create no problems at all. But it's not going to have any data there. So what we're going to need is we're going to need a DAC pack deployed to create our databases and schema, and then we're going to need a SQL script run to populate the tables and populate any data. So we'll go click Add, and we'll go SQL Server Data Tier Application. And if we click Browse, we'll find the incentive DAC pack that we prepared earlier. We'll call it incentive data tier. Now you'll see that it's able to pull straight out of the metadata the SQL DAC instance name, database name, right? It knows exactly what it is straight from the metadata. We can also pick authentication type. So for this one, because we've specified, in our template, in our VM template, an SSA username and password, it makes sense to use that. So we'll go SQL Server Auth. We'll set the deployment run as account to right down the bottom there, the SA account. And we also have the option here of uninstall mode. So we can say, do we want to detach the database? Do we want to drop the database? So if we're uninstalling this DAC pack, how are we going to go forward? In this case, let's just say drop database, right? Because I don't want to keep that data. If we go over to advanced, we've got some cool stuff here too. So we've got ignore any out-of-band changes that have been made to the target database since it was created. So this is all talking about updating it. Let's say we've got an existing running application, right? And we've got a newer version of the DAC pack, right? What we're saying is, do we want to ignore any out-of-band changes that have been made to the database since it's changed? So it's going to have a quick look and say, do you want to ignore those or not? We can ignore any data loss. So basically, if we're going to upgrade the database, what's going to happen? Are we going to drop it? Does the SQL script go through and completely replace it? We can initiate a rollback in the event of a database upgrade failure, and we can validate policy against the targeted SQL Server database instance when deploying the SQL Server data tier application. I'm not sure what that does. I haven't tested it out, I'm sorry. But we'll leave all those blank for now. But if we wanted to, we could say just tick these two, and straight away, anytime we deployed a new update, it'd just drop the databases and straight away repopulate them with new fresh data, which is fine if it's really just something like a website, right, or a simple web application where there's no data being written back to the database. If there is data being written back to the database from your web application, you obviously don't want to drop your databases. Okay, so we'll cancel there. And the next thing we do is we can go and pick a SQL Server script. So obviously, we're going to want to run this script post-install this time, right? Because keep in mind, we've got the DAC pack deploying our schema and our model, right? So if we want to deploy, say, a SQL script that's going to go through and create all that information for us, we can do it here. So we'll pick post-install, database name, incentive. Again, we'll use the SA password. It's down here. And we're obviously going to need a SQL Server script, right, for this to run. So as it happens, we've got all those in our VMM library. VMM's aware of SQL Server scripts. So in this case, we'll say we'll use the install.sql script. Okay. Now what we can do there, we're running short on time, but I really want to show you this quickly. Is if we go back up here to SQL scripts, we actually edit the install file. Right, you can see in here we've got $incentive username and $incentive password. Right? So if we want to, we can actually use those variables inside VMM and it will write out to the SQL script for us. So let me just close that. And if we go back here, we say parameters and okay, we'll increase the timeout just in case something goes wrong. The SQL stuff tends to take a little bit longer. And as you can see, if I wanted to too, I could add, say, another SQL script, let's say prepare. I'm going to remove it immediately, and we'll say we'll run that after, right? So you can see you've got pre and post install, and we can order the order that these SQL scripts run as. Let's just remove that one, and we'll click OK. That's errors coming up because, let me just hit OK again. So it's saying application profile is not compatible with the current guest OS profile, so I really need to go through and say, well, I want it to run on all versions of R2. Click OK. This is actually a bug too, this bit. So if we could close, every time you save a template, it rewrites the template name as machine tier. I'm hoping that's fixed up in beta. I haven't had a chance to look at. So I'll call it SQL tier. Okay, and now I can go through and click configure deployment for this. So I'll just quickly save. All right, now you can see we've got quite a bit of information here that we can actually populate, right? We can say, let's join to demo.local. We use a particular domain join account. And we'll use a particular local admin account. And for the SQL password, we'll say password 123. And incentive app. Now, what we've done there is essentially create an entire self-contained web application which can be deployed with one click of a button now and five values. So this will go out and it will actually create both VMs, right? Install SQL, install IIS, all the roles and features, install a DAC pack which installs your database, creates the database, creates the model and schema, populates it with data and tables, then goes over to your IIS server, installs a web deploy package which is an entire website ready to go, with your connection string already customized, so it goes back to the database, and this will just work out of the box. How cool is that? Is that sexy? Yeah, it's really, really cool. This it really does change the way you deploy virtual machines. And keep in mind, this doesn't just go for Hyper-V. This works on VMware and Zen Server as well. So it really is amazing stuff. I'm pretty sure I'm only down to about 5 minutes now. So unfortunately, I didn't get as much time to show all the demos I really wanted to show. I wanted to show you an update. But I'll hang around for a few questions. Does anyone have any questions now before we continue? Yep.
Can you batch deploy a whole series of servers? Say if you needed to create 10 instances?
10 servers?
Well, 10 of those, so you created the servers, but you needed to deploy it, say, 10 times to the same data center or multiple data centers?
You could, but you do it with PowerShell. So what this actually does is when you click deploy, I'll click deploy now. It may or may not work. I don't know if I've got enough space, but it's saying, do I want to deploy? I click view script, and that's how you do a batch deploy with that. So you could wrap that up in a function if you want. What you'd have to be careful of is that when we click deploy, obviously the VM names are going to be customized to SQL 001 and IS 001. You'd really want to be careful about that kind of thing and the passwords and usernames used. So you'd have to be very careful to validate everything. Any other questions? Yes.
When you created this, you versioned it to version 2, but then you renamed it as well. Are there any gotchas there?
No, the release and the name are just for your own purposes. So let me just go back to the demo system for a second. I'll show you something. If you go to service templates, you can see I've got standard two-tier application 1.0 and 1.1, right? That's a copy, right? And by keeping it the same name, it lets you know it's a future version of that template, right? So if you were upgrading templates, what you do is you create version 1.1 or version 2. You'd make the changes to the template, and then you'd apply. I'll show you very quickly what it looks like. Let's say we go back to VMs and services. Oh, I've lost connectivity. Perfect timing. If I went back to VM services, right, and I clicked on that, you know, the services I had up there earlier, I showed them right at the beginning of the three services, right, click on one of them, right click, and go set template, and then I can pick out a newer version of the template. So it doesn't even have to be the same template, right, it'll work out what the differences are, and it will completely do a redeploy. And depending on how I've done all the settings, like do I want to drop databases and that kind of thing, it will do a complete upgrade, rewrite, roll back everything it needs to, push out the whole new instance. So, yet, a roundabout answer there, I know, but there's no real link between the actual names and the versioning. Right? They're just for your own purposes. Any questions? Yep. Sorry? No, because the self-service portal is not hanging around. Self-service portal is being... It's going to be around, right? Sorry, it is going to be around, but it's not being developed in any way, shape, or form. The new way forward is going to be App Controller. And I haven't had a look to see if it's available in App Controller. I would assume it's going to be an SP1. Does anyone know? No, nobody knows. I'm hoping it will be, but it's definitely available if you're a self-service user using the console. Yep.
What's the difference between
this and App Controller? App Controller is a website, really, for controlling system, controlling private clouds. Clouds. So App Controller allows you to connect into Azure or into System Center Cloud or an ESX Cloud or anything that you've got cloud resources you can hook in. Right? Have there been any App Controller sessions here? No? Oh, that's a shame. App Controller, if you get the chance to check it out, is very lightweight. It's really awesome. Essentially, it's a very, very powerful website for controlling. Well, if you're using VMM, I would highly recommend you install App Controller and check it out. All you do is connect to the cloud, and you can do everything you can do inside the console pretty much. Had some questions there, so you want to? you got a question?
No.
Let me just give them out for the guys who actually did ask questions. So. Go for it. There's a couple more, so come on up. Anyone else got questions? But not... Yes? How do you... Sorry, say that again? Oh, yes, yes. It's not on the VM itself because the VM is irrelevant. If you go to VMs and services, which it's a shame it crashed at exactly that moment. I'm linking back to my home cloud. You can actually see exactly which template and exactly which release that is.
Thanks, Mark. Great.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
What sort of complications are there in a VMware?
Sorry? What kind of complications are there hooking into VMware? As far as I know, none. It should just work, because this is all guest OS customization, right? VMM technology to deploy to VM, vCloud, all that kind of stuff, has been around for a couple of versions now, so that stuff should be pretty good. Yeah, all the guest customization should just work.
Here we go. All right.
Good luck.
Do you have a bespoke vendor app that you want to put on top of iOS? Are you suggesting the best? What would be the best sort of practice?
Is it an iOS app, like a complete
that's
iOS?
That's a J2E app that has iOS out front.
Okay, so first thing you do is create the iOS site. Like, you'd actually go and create the full thing, right? You'd install Web Deploy on that server, and then you'd go to iOS, right-click, save as a Web Deploy package, which would bundle up all that stuff. You'd obviously need also some other stuff in your template, right, to deploy. You'd need the stuff to push out Tomcat. That's probably going to be a server app v package. I could be wrong, but that would make sense to me. Thank you very much.
So basically, you would need to work on getting that Tomcat install package to just run as a...
Well, is Tomcat an MSI or an XE?
Well, it's a vendor-supplied installation process.
Okay.
It's GUI-based.
So. Oh, really? If you can get a silent mode install, or if you can sysprep it,
right. That's
your answer.
Okay.
So if you can get them to give you the MSI with the, you know, /Q/blah, that'll work. Or the XE with a flag for silent, or just install it, because Tomcat, I think, from memory, actually syspreps quite well.
Okay.
So install it, sysprep over the top of it, should be good to go.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
No?